Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Special technique of shadow boxing.
This is the August 30th, 2020 episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. I am your host, James Bell, the leader of the Boxing Source, here on this podcast and on social media. Be sure to follow us on Instagram through the Boxing Source, also on Facebook. We do have a Facebook page. Go to the Boxing Source and like the page and follow the page there on Facebook. We're also on Twitter at BoxingSource2 on Twitter. And we do have this particular podcast now streaming live through YouTube. Number to dial in to talk boxing is 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on cue. You'll be able to talk live on the show. We got a few things that we're going to be talking about in this particular podcast. We had a good amount of action over the weekend, and we're going to be covering that and, you know, also going through what is in store next Saturday as we, you know, have another world title fight scheduled for Saturday. So looking forward to that. But we also may have a guest caller calling in here this week. So that may be part of the show here. So we've got about, I'd say, you know, see if we'll go for 2 hours here in the live session. And we're going to get, you know, things cracking. Now, you know, we did have a unified world title fight that took place last night. It was one title fight that has been, you know, delayed for months and months and months. It's been over 6 months, or pretty much going by 7 months almost to, you know, the day that this fight was originally scheduled. This was for the WBC and WBO super lightweight titles, with Jose Ramirez taking on Victor Postol. Victor Postol, former WBC super lightweight champion, you know, was able to get that WBC title with the win over Lucas Matisse, but then lost in a unification bout with Terrence Crawford, Terrence Crawford en route to becoming the undisputed super lightweight champion, right? And you know, now he was, you know, able to work his way back to becoming the number one contender for the WBC super lightweight title. He did have one, you know, other attempt at, you know, trying to be, you know, at the top of the super lightweight division in 2018. He was part of that World Boxing Super Series tournament, but lost in the first round against Josh Taylor. That was like in June of 2018. He lost by unanimous decision in that particular matchup. But then, you know, he was able to, you know, kind of like I said, get himself back into the position of being the top contender there for the WBC title. Now going up against Jose Carlos Ramirez, who, you know, was coming in there undefeated, did have that win over Miramon to acquire the WBC super lightweight title after it was vacated by Terrence Crawford. Then, you know, had a string of wins there at 140. That was, you know, fairly impressive. He, you know, defeated Antonio Orozco there and was able to get that unanimous decision win. Then he had his win over Jose Cepeda, who was, you know, they were just one loss. And then had the unification bout against Maurice Hooker, where he was able to win by TKO victory in the sixth round. So within, you know, that string of victories, man, that's, you know, very impressive. And if you also include the win that he had before defeating Amir Imam against Mike Reed, right, he's, you know, had a string of victories where he the combined losses for, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 before fighting Victor Postol, the combined losses that five opponents that Jose Ramirez had was two losses total from the five previous opponents that he took on. So he was able to get those string of victories there within the 140-pound division. And now he was going up against Victor Postol. And I thought it was a, you know, pretty good fight between those two. Victor Postol is a, you know, very good fighter, very skilled fighter, I would say, you know, from the Ukraine. Was, you know, to me, he is, you know, someone that could, that gives anybody problems there in the super lightweight division. He's, you know, there with, at 5'11 with a 73.5-inch reach. And, you know, that's something that Jose Ramirez had to deal with, because Ramirez is not, you know, necessarily a guy that, you know, stands there and, you know, works his jab and then, you know, follows up with the right hand after that. He's somebody that's a workhorse, someone that comes forward, you know, works the body, gets power shots in on the inside, and is able to, you know, break down his opponents to, you know, either, you know, get a stoppage win, you know, a knockout, or, you know, or a decision, right? So that's pretty much what we had in those, in that first half of the fight. You know, Victor Postol was able to utilize the jab very well in the first few rounds, particularly. You know, he knew what he had in front of him, and he just worked that left jab, bam, 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 snapped it out, bam, bam, bam. And, you know, I thought that was, you know, very good there from Victor Postol. Well, you know, Jose Ramirez was just trying to get to the inside and work 1, 2, 3, get a few combinations in, affect Victor Postol that way. And I just felt like it was a good back and forth fight between the two. You did see like one significant shot coming from Ramirez left hand to Victor Postol that affected Postol, but nothing following up after that to, you know, either put Postol down to the canvas or have him seriously hurt. So Postol was able to get through that fourth round after that left hand or the left hook from Jose Ramirez. And kind of, you know, I just felt like it was a, you know, a good back and forth fight between, you know, those two fighters right there, right? And it was just something there where I just felt like, you know, Jose Ramirez had to, you know, work his way to get past Victor Postol. And the scorecards, you know, showed that it was a, you know, majority decision win for Jose Ramirez for him to stay undefeated and retain those WBC and WBO super lightweight titles. Now, the scores came through as 115-113 from Tim Cheatham, And it was 116-112 from Steve Weisfeld. And Dave Moretti had it as a draw with it being 114-114. Now, there were a few people that kind of like brought up that the scorecards were very interesting, particularly the last round, as all three judges scored the 12th and final round for Jose Ramirez. Now, if they would have scored it 10, now if any of them, particularly Tim Cheatham or Dave Moretti, scored it 10-9 for Victor Postol, it could have either been a draw, pretty much like a majority draw, or, you know, I would say like a draw overall, because you would have had, like, for example, if you would have had Tim Cheatham score 10-9 for Victor Postol and everyone else kept it 10-9 for Jose Ramirez, then you would have had a majority draw with two judges scoring at 114-114. Now, it also could have been there where if Dave Moretti scored it 10-9 for Victor Postol, like he scored the 11th round 10-9 for Victor Postol, then he would have had it 115-113 for Victor Postol. And it would have been, you know, either a split decision or, you know, something where if you have more than one of those judges, Cheatham or Moretti, I'm talking about, if you have more than one of them, you know, scoring that 10-9, then you would have had some different scorecards there for that particular fight. But either way, you do have Jose Ramirez there as the victor. He retains that WBC and WBO super lightweight titles. He is on his way to potentially facing the IBF and WBA super lightweight champion there in Josh Taylor. Jose Ramirez was like, you know, it's like it's been a long time since, you know, they were supposed to have this fight. It was originally scheduled for February 1st in China, but of course, you know, what went down with that. And Jose Ramirez, you know, was feeling like, you know, he was in there, like it was cold. He felt cold in the ring. That he just doesn't, he said, I just got to not lose confidence in myself and stick to what I do best and box. Let my hands go and not hesitate too much. I think there was a little bit of hesitation throughout the fight. So he feels like he was not as aggressive there in, you know, this particular fight like he was beforehand. So that was one of his initial comments after the fight. He also felt like he was like in a sparring session. He felt like he could have made the fight a lot easier in his favor, but he's like, it's a learning lesson there. But I don't think he's kind of given Victor Postol as much credit as, you know, Postol is a very tough and very skilled fighter. I got someone from the 202 area code calling in. What's going on? You're on the Boston Sports Radio Show.
Hey, what's going on? It's Mr. Give Me All My Credit. What's this world rank? What's going on?
What's good, my man? What's good?
Chilling, man. Just catching the show and seeing what's going on.
Yeah, man. Just, you know, briefly went through the fight between Jose Ramirez and Victor Postol. You know, the scorecards were a majority decision in his favor. You know, I found that, you know, pretty interesting. I thought it was a pretty good tactical bout between the two fighters. I felt that Victor Postol kind of like faded in the second half of the fight in comparison to the first half. And I was kind of like impressed with Postol in the first half of the fight and thought that he could have had Jose Ramirez, you know, with some problems because he was using his jab very well in that particular fight. And Ramirez isn't, to me, someone that kind of like, you know, either nullifies the jab or has good enough head movement to you know, try to get to the inside of Victor Postol and do some work, you know. But Postol kind of like faded down the stretch, and that kind of, you know, was the difference in that bout.
Yeah, I mean, I take a little different take. I think I thought Ramirez started decently. I know Postol jab was doing a good job nullifying Ramirez from getting in, but I don't. It seemed like it was a pesky jab, but it didn't seem like it was a hard scoring jab. Kind of like the jabs he threw when he fought Matisse. Like when he fought Matisse, it seemed like he threw his jab with bad intentions and his punches with bad intentions. I didn't see that this fight. He did do well defensively. I think what he did do was Ramirez tried to get on the inside. He did hold Ramirez, so he stopped Ramirez a couple of times from doing well on the in fighting. The jab was clearly effective, but I just don't think it was a meaningful punch. I think it was just like a get off me type jab, which worked in this fight for whatever reason. Ramirez was like you said, he was kind of hesitant to get on the inside, but once he did, he wasn't able to work because Postol did a good job of holding. It wasn't excessive holding or like that, but it was like a tactical hold. Once Ramirez tried to get inside, during the middle of the fight, I think that's when Postol picked up his activity a little bit. He came a little more active, threw a little more punches other than the jab, got a little more confident. But it seemed like I don't know if it was fading. I didn't see fading. I just felt like Postol kind of coasted. That's I guess that's kind of how I think, like coasted. He was okay with. As long as he wasn't getting punched.
It almost like seemed like it kind of like looked that way. You know, once the decision was made, was like, you know, he was like, yeah, okay, clap it up. You know, props to Ramirez. You know, I made it through these 12 rounds or whatnot. But you know, you did make a good point in reference to the jab of Postol. It kind of was more of like a defensive jab, like instead of an offensive jab, and what I mean by that was like he almost like used it to, you know, just keep Jose Ramirez away from him, He didn't like necessarily follow it up with the right hand that much, or throw that many combinations off of it, you know. But even though he was like kind of landing a few times with it, it wasn't like you said, it wasn't a very aggressive type of a jab. Like, in comparison, I would say, like, you know, last week you had the Sean Porter fight, and Sean Porter kind of, like, used his jab, but he was, like, stepping forward with his jab or jumping forward with his jab. You know, that's like an offensive jab, like coming forward. Because if I come forward with the jab, I can follow it up with a, you know, right hook or right uppercut or something like that because I'm closer to you. But Victor Postol was mainly like, you know, fighting off his back foot, throwing that jab and continually, you know, doing that off his back foot to where he couldn't really get too much off of his right hand if he threw it.
Yeah, exactly. And it just seemed like Postol was more content with not getting in a firefight than actually doing anything offensively. It just seemed like I don't think he was resigned from the start to be that way. I just think maybe when he got hurt in that one round where Ramirez caught him, after that he was probably like, I'm not about to I don't know what the right term is, but it just seemed like he didn't want any part of fighting on the inside or exchanging with Ramirez.
Mhm. Yeah, and I thought that, you know, after Ramirez landed that left hook in the fourth round, and Postol was able to weather that, that he could, you know, get himself more comfortable, but he didn't necessarily do that. But in a sense, I'm kind of like not surprised that Postol really didn't change much because of who his trainer is. But that's, you know, kind of a whole nother thing there with, you know, Freddie Roach. You know, I just didn't see, like, many adjustments from either fighter, you know. And that's kind of interesting given that you have the trainers there, Robert Garcia on one side and Freddie Roach on the other. And, you know, those are, you know, two of the notable trainers in the sport of boxing, but you didn't really see that much, tactical action or anything like a change from either one of those fighters during the fight.
Now, do we know, just from your perspective, do you know, and I know all fighters, well, most fighters have the ability to change tactics, but I don't know if either one of these fighters, maybe post do more, but either one of these fighters are real used to adaptation in terms of their style in fight.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Postu only being assertive in one of his fights, and that was the Matisse fight. He was a more prime. He was a more primal version. I don't know what tactic made him fight that way in that fight, but in the Taylor fight, in this fight, he's not offensively motivated sometimes. And for Ramirez,
right.
He's not necessarily defensive minded. A lot. It just seems like his style is to come forward. And I think that's maybe the reason why neither one of them maybe changed their tactics, because I think both were comfortable being where they are. And I didn't think Postal was willing to risk it to win the fight. And I don't think Ramirez team may have thought they needed, you know, to change their tactics because they're the ones coming forward. They're landing the hard shots. They probably just thought, hey, if we both teams probably thought if we keep the same style, I don't necessarily know what Postal's team was thinking in terms of fighting that type of style of fight and think they won't get the decision. But I can understand Ramirez not changing his tactics.
Yeah, I feel you. Because like if there's nothing that Postal is doing for Ramirez to kind of like change things up, then he's like, it's almost like if it's not broke, why fix it? In the case of Ramirez. Got a caller in there, 205 area code. What's up? You're on the Boxing Source Radio Show.
What's going on, James? What's going on, World Ranked? It's Mike Grady calling out of Atlanta. How y'all fellas doing?
Doing good.
What's up,
man? Doing good. I just, you know, World Ranked kind of like said it, man. Like, it didn't seem like either fighter really changed things up, what they wanted to do in this particular fight. And, you know, maybe Victor Postol was kind of like glad that he got through 12 rounds or something. I mean, what do you think?
I think that, so the point that I heard World Rank say when I got on was he didn't see many adjustments from the coaches. I'm going to ad-lib and add in more than what he said, but it was more so like, do what you're doing, keep pressuring, just do this and, you know, your will overcome. It was just that kind of, you know, thing versus a Virgil Hunter who will tell his fighter, you know, all right, keep going to the body. When he does that, make sure you slip right here and throw the left hand, you know, some type of tactical adjustment. But what I will say, have you seen any of those trainers in many other fights do just that, make tactical changes in mid-fight where they told their fighter, you know, so this is not working. This is the strategy that we're going to try now and do this. Have you seen Freddie Roach do that with Manny Pacquiao when at times Manny Pacquiao need to change stuff up? Or, you know, Garcia where, let's say, like Mikey Garcia, you know, needed to change something up in a Errol Spence or, you know, whatever type of fight. Like, have you really seen that? And then I'll get
on the comments on the side. I would say, I'm thinking about Mike Garcia's fight against Rick the Model Martel. I mean, Jesse Vargas. Like, if he really, you know, made any real adjustments in that particular fight. And after scoring that knockdown, I didn't really see that many adjustments there for him to, like, kind of finish off Vargas or anything like that. Like, the way that he kind of, like, went through that particular fight, at the end of it, he almost got himself in trouble and almost got himself seriously hurt by the time that last round was coming to a close. So, yeah, I mean, you know, for guys like, you know, Robert Garcia and Freddie Roach that have notable fighters you know, under their stable, they don't necessarily, you know, kind of like stand out as far as like, you know, giving their fighters pointers to adjust in between rounds in the fight.
So I am not taking away from Freddie Roach's ability to prepare a fighter pregame for what the fighter needs to do, from looking at tape and then preparing the fighter with predefined motions on how they need to, you know, go about attacking the fighter or attacking their opponent and things like that. I'm saying I'm not taking away from his ability and, you know, world-class ability to do that and prepare a fighter on the front end. But mid-game,
mm-hmm.
I think that's another level of coaching where the coaches are able to do that, to see what's going wrong, what's not working from the plan, and to tell them to deviate or alter or change just a little bit and see how that works, or notice something and tell them to implement that. I think it's another level of coaching where you have the coaches who are able to do that, and those are better coaches, and they typically get more out of their fighters than what the fighters, you know, even themselves probably have. You know, I'm not trying to be funny when I say this, and again, I'm not trying to take away from these fighters, but a lot of times, a lot of those, even both of those trainers get pre-made fighters, get fighters that already have, you know, either the amateur background, or they came from another coach where they already kind of already had all of the skills. Isn't Virgil Ortiz under what's his name?
Yeah, he's under Garcia.
And so I would wonder who had Virgil Ortiz first, and was it Freddie Roach, and before Freddie Roach, who had Virgil Ortiz before then? Somebody else had him before either of those two guys got him, and they did what he needed to do to help his initial foundation. And that foundation is what makes those guys better than the next guys. But then when you take a guy who has, you know, a great foundation, and then you match him with a guy who has an equal or even better foundation, they're not able to win those things unless they get that, you know, lucky, not going to say lucky, unless they get that big shot that ends the fight. Are they able to, like, break a fighter down, you know, sort of like how Andre Ward did with Kovalev and Kovalev 2. That was probably the best performance I've seen a fighter take in terms of implementing a strategy and, you know, just working on it. But in terms of the two fighters, this is probably my second fight watching, not Postal. What's the other guy's name? I'm sorry.
Ramirez.
So this is my second fight watching Ramirez. If Ramirez get a boxer in there who has a little pop, who can move, who can, you know, like, don't get me wrong, Postal can box, and that's why he was getting those clean shots. Like, he was getting pretty clean shots and landing, and at times it looked like he was buzzing Ramirez. But if he can get a boxer in there who has a little bit of pop and who knows how to command a ring and know how to just do that without sort of just being okay with being the number two in the dance, because Ramirez was leading the action. He was controlling the action. Postal was getting off good shots when he indeed let his hands go. But the first four or five rounds, he just was throwing his left hand. He didn't start throwing his right hand until, like, the middle rounds, and they were landing. Why not do that in round three? You know, I get it. Don't do it in round one or two because you don't want to get caught, but why wait so late? Because he was definitely landing bigger shots. I think I don't know how the other guy, who he's going to fight for the unification. My thing is even if he does unify and beat the next guy, does becoming undisputed at 140 right now in this time, even with Terrence Crawford doing it, does that really mean anything? Does it mean anything in comparison to what, let's say, like a Tim Bradley or a Danny Garcia, when they beat the guys at 140 they beat? Does this really mean anything? And the crop of guys that people are beating to become undisputed, what the fuck does that really mean? Because people say that and they give them all these accolades. Oh, it's only four fighters in the history who did it. But, like, really, what does it mean? Does this guy – I just – that just really kind of irks me a little bit, because I don't think it means much. What y'all think?
I'm going to say this. and it'll come off as hating for a few amount of people. But if Jose Ramirez beats Josh Taylor and becomes the undisputed super lightweight champion, what Jose Ramirez did at super lightweight
is more than Terrence Crawford. It's better than Terrence
exactly.
Crawford.
Yeah, exactly.
I agree. If you look at the opposition that Ramirez had to go through, and Mike, I don't know if you saw the Hooker fight, but the style that you mentioned was kind of like Hooker. And I think Ramirez showed in that fight that he can fight against that type of style. Because Hooker was, to me, that was Hooker at his best. And I don't think we'll see a Hooker better than that. That's just my personal opinion. I thought Hooker on that night.
Yeah.
And quite naturally, I obviously didn't see the fight. I didn't watch the fight, so I would need to go back and, you know, look at his big fights. But, you know, the guy I saw yesterday against that Postal, I really wasn't that impressed, to be real, because he seems like I hear what you're saying, but from that fight, he seemed limited to me. What you saying now?
I see
what you're saying on there, you know, going off this fight against Victor Postal, you know. But, you know, kind of like before y'all got on, I kind of like went through, you know, what Jose Ramirez, his resume was, you know, right before he won the WBC super lightweight title, that was vacated by, Terrence Crawford. So, he beat Mike Reed, who was 23-0. Then he won the vacant title against Amir Imam, who was 21-1. Then beat Antonio Roscoe, who was 27-0, Jose Cepeda, who was 30-1, and then Maurice Hooker, who was 26-0-3 at the time. Then you have Postal, and after that, he'll be fighting Josh Taylor, who's, you know, at 16-0. So out of all of those guys, like, the total amount of losses would be, you know, just 4 losses off that run alone from all those fighters. So That's going to be a serious run there at 140 if he's able to do it, you know. But like you said, I mean, it's not like he's doing anything that has him stand out, you know, over the other top fighters at 140 or, you know, the fighters that are, you know, within 135 and 147 and whatnot, you know. And the thing is like I did kind of like mentioned that if he was able to defeat Josh Taylor for the undisputed super lightweight title, could people consider him to be, you know, within that pound for pound list? Because if you're going to have Terrence Crawford on that list and we seen what he did at 140, then how can, you know, Jose Ramirez not be under consideration? Because, I mean, folks, think about it. Like, Ramirez's win over Hooker is probably a bigger win than whatever Crawford had at 140.
Yeah, that's I agree with that. Mike, when you get a chance, just watch the Hooker fight, not just for this conversation, but just the entertainment value. Because that fight was two guys, high IQ boxing, and it was you can tell the brain of Hooker against the power of Ramirez, and it was just the style of the fight was so entertaining. But back to the conversation about where Ramirez is, I think his resume, and this is when we go into the talk about eye test against resume, because everybody's basing Crawford, and I think rightly so, off the eye test, because it's hard to rate him off the resume. And then you take Ramirez, well, the eye test isn't all that great. I just think this was one of the fights where he just fought the style of type of fighter Postal was. It's just not an entertaining style. So I don't know if you can take one fight and just say Ramirez isn't as good, but his eye test isn't that strong. So it's like one of those things where – but his resume is hella tough for 140, especially if he gets Josh Taylor. I just think the opportunity is there to take that mantle that Crawford – that Crawford left.
Yeah, but I mean, my thing is though, if Ramirez does go ahead and defeat, you know, Taylor, I feel like they're gonna set him up to go up to 147, and I don't see him as a 147 guy. He's at right now at 140. He doesn't have that type of, you know, like you said with the eye test, that he could move up to 147 and do something. I think that if he moves up to 147, he might be, you know, significantly slower. He won't have the power behind him, and he could, you know, he could be in real trouble if he goes up to 147. But that kind of like, it looks like that's what they're trying to do with Ramirez here at this particular point. If he, you know, goes ahead and he, you know, fights Josh Taylor and wins. But I've also heard that the WBO top contender is trying to get himself in to, you know, say, hey, I want my mandatory shot. So I don't know if this fight between Ramirez and Taylor is going to happen, you know, by the end of this year, because that's what, you know, Bob Arum is planning. But if they, you know, had this WBO thing going, then I don't know. But like one person said, the WBO could stand for the World Bob Organization. So they might say, hold off on that mandatory there real quick so we can have this fight. So, you know, that's what they had there. They had like one other thing going on during the fight. They kind of had some talk, and that was, you know, what was it, about four rounds, five rounds in or something, they had a little bit of a quarrel between Andre Ward and Tim Bradley. And it was when, like, Andre Ward had, like, the scorecard there within four or five rounds. And after, like, if it was, like, after five rounds, he had, you know, Ramirez up four rounds to one, where Tim Bradley felt like, you know, Victor Postol was either, you know, ahead 3-2 or, you know, it was like 3-2 the other way. So it was like a lot of people felt like Andre Ward didn't necessarily, you know, kind of like see the fight the way that most other people did see it. And then the other thing was that he kind of made a comment about Josh Taylor, saying that, you know, he doesn't think that Josh Taylor is that good of an inside fighter. And that's what really, you know, got people triggered, especially those fans in the UK. But, I mean, it is what it is there. It's Andre Ward. He don't really, you know, watch that much tape anyway. So what are y'all thoughts about Andre Ward's comments during and after the fight?
I think, I think it is very tough to call a fight while scoring it. It's hard enough to score a fight. But if you give him blow-by-blow or whatever he is, if he's not the blow-by-blow announcer, if he's giving commentary on what's going on, it is also very difficult to objectively say who you think won the round when in most of the rounds, in a lot of the rounds, it was a lot of jab, 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 jab versus follow you around, throw a hook, throw a body shot. You know, like it was – I wasn't scoring the fight, but I could see it that you get scorecards that are kind of over the place, because in the rounds it's the same. Like every time you get somebody the Matador and the Bull, it's gonna always be that, and it's just really your preference. And if I scored the fight, I'd have had a more definitive answer. But you know, without me scoring it, it just really depends on what you like. Like I didn't score to see what punches and, you know, my normal way of scoring where I try to be objective. So I don't think he off base in his what's the name? And I don't even can say Tim Bradley off base. I just think that, you know, I feel that he favors, you know, because he said something like this in another fight where it was a Bull versus a Matador fight, and he said he favored the Bull. So I would go so far to say I think he favors the Bull, you know, like, and when it's a Floyd Mayweather, then, you know, he favors boxing because, you know, in Floyd Mayweather case, everybody kind of favors him unless you really don't like him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel you on that one. World Rank, you got something on it?
I mean, I agree with Ward's scorecard, so I didn't see necessarily anything wrong with it. And this just goes to show how subjective scoring is. I mean, like I said, there's not a person on this who follow boxing, who enjoy boxing, don't have a card from way back when or a recent fight where it's all from everybody else. So I didn't take anything to that. I like how Tim Bradley was more assertive in terms of, like, really, like, I like that type of back and forth where it's playful in a way, but it's, like, serious in a way. Like, really, you got this guy up? How can you – like, I like getting into that debate of how they score in the rounds. Ward didn't really take debate in terms of going into the conversation about what he saw. He didn't. He kind of went to it, but he didn't really – they didn't really have that back and forth that it seemed like Tim wanted. So I kind of like that from Tim, the aspect. He was like, really, you got it this way? Like, how do you got it this way? Like, at the end, Ward was right because the scores kind of favor Ramirez other than the draw. So – Ward was kind of right in the way, like, he saw Ramirez up. So I didn't see any, you know, it's just two people having a disagreement about the scorecard. Either way, it wasn't off that much, so I didn't really take anything from it.
Yeah, it just looked like it was kind of different in the sense that the judges had Victor Postol up through round five. Actually, two of them had him up through round seven. So it wasn't until, like, after rounds eight and nine to where Ramirez kind of, like, had the favor on the judges' scorecards there. So, you know, when you say it was, like, a close fight, yeah, after about eight rounds or so, it was – pretty much an even fight. Like, two judges had it even through eight, you know, and one judge just had it five rounds to three for Ramirez after eight rounds. So that kind of, like, shows, like you said, how close that bout particularly was, you know.
Let me ask you something about the scoring aspect. You were touching on this earlier, how the judges gave the 12th round to Ramirez. And I want to touch on, like, how do we – because I personally think that these judges tally up in their mind what they have in each round. So let's say we in round six, I think they keep a note saying that the fight is 3-3. And what happens is, just in my opinion, like, if they think that somebody who they prefer to win in the 12th round, and then they know that it's 6-5 or whatever the case may be, they might score those rounds in a different manner knowing the score. So my thought was, is there a way, or do you think there's should there be kind of like a situation where they score a round, they score it other than on paper? Like, is there maybe computerized where they don't necessarily remember
the thing, or they have to do it through just not with the form that they have, I guess.
Right.
Because, like, they would, I think they, like, have it, like, where all 10 or all 12 rounds are, you know, there in front of them, and they put the 10-9 there and then write what the total is.
Right.
But, you know, up into, you know, an extent of, okay, I scored round one, 10-9. Here you go. You take that. Then I score another round on another sheet of paper, give it up, you know. So they would have to do it for each sheet of paper, and then someone else has to tally those scores. I mean, I'm not sure if, you know, they kind of, you know, have a method where they do that, or, like you said, it's computerized where they just enter in the round and, you know, they just – or somebody has to, like, watch them, you know, while they do their thing, because, like you said, if it's, like, up to a certain point in the fight where, like, you know, it could be, like, around 10 or around 11 and it's fairly close, they could pretty much say, hey, if I favor this particular fighter, I'm going to kind of lean towards that fighter over the final two rounds regardless of, you know, how close the, you know, rounds are, you know?
Right, so, right.
Like, you know, if it's either like a fairly close round or, you know, something where, you know, if the other fighter is kind of doing, you know, better, but not that much better, then they could still, you know, lean towards the fighter that they favor. You know, I think that's kind of, you know, what they, you know, what they do there in this particular instance. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I don't
call
think
that's the Canelo.
Canelo?
I would call that the Canelo effect. Because very much so, if you – okay, let's take Canelo out of it, even though that is the Canelo effect. But if you favor, as a judge, favor a fighter and or if the – let me not get into all of it. But if the promoter take you out to dinner, do all this stuff, put you up in the hotel, fly you down, and all this other stuff, and you don't have a round that's big for the opponent, and it's a close round, realistically, with all this stuff, knowing good and well, if you have a close round and you don't score it for the whatever fighter, do you know in your mind that they won't bring you back down and do all this stuff, and or they won't bring you to, you know, judge fights anymore for this particular promoter if you don't do it and they have a close round and it's very subjective in terms of who won the round and you don't score it for the house fighter.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is what it is.
Because I do think subjectively in the back of their mind, round 10, 11, and 12, they're already tallying what the score is up to that point. So
okay,
I do think in their mind there's something there that says, hey, this score is this. Not that they automatically change it, but I think it's in the back of their mind that this is the score at this point. And I think they do, there could be some swing things that go on and some thoughts that go past them in those 10th, 11th, and 12th rounds that make them change their scorecards. That's just me personally.
I mean, yeah, that's kind of like, you know, all across the board, you know, regardless of, you know, if it's a 10-round fight, 12-round fight, could even be an 8-round fight, you know. They kind of like have a thought in their mind, like, okay, this is the fighter that, you know, they're trying to push, so I'm going to have, you know, them kind of like have the favor, you know, have the favor in the particular fight whenever there's a close round or something like that. So, yeah, I think that type of scoring system that you suggested, World Bank, that should be kind of like adopted. There, but you know, it'll be some time before those people even consider it. I wanted to move into the other main event that was going on during that time, or actually before that time, because the Fox telecast ended before the ESPN. They had the thing there with Arizlan De Lara against Greg Vendetti for the WBA super welterweight title, regular title. It had the you know, Lara there with the unanimous decision. So you know, with that unanimous decision win, he moves to 27-3-3. He had two scores of 117-111, one score of 116-112. It just felt like he was, you know, consent on going through 12 rounds. I didn't feel like Vendetti won 4 rounds or even 3 rounds, but the judges gave him, you know, at least 3 rounds in that particular bout. Vendetti, you know, just kind of like looked like a tough guy, but, you know, not much coming from him during that particular fight. And, you know, Arizlan De Lara is aiming to either fight the winner of Jermell Charlo versus Jason Rosario, or, you know, try to buy for, you know, another world title there, which I don't see, because, you know, the other, what is it, the WBO title is through another, you know, through another promotional company. I actually, what I would want to do is I would want to see him in a rematch against Brian Carlos Castaño, because that ended up being a draw. So why not run that fight back? Either that, or you know, have a rematch with Jared Hurd there. So we'll have to see what goes on in that particular instance. And in the co-feature They had Alfredo Angulo against a replacement opponent there in Vladimir Hernandez, as Caleb Truax had to, you know, be scratched due to an illness. And Vladimir Hernandez was able to get a unanimous decision win, 8-2 over Alfredo Angulo, with a whole bunch of punches being thrown in that particular bout, like over, what, 2,300 punches total in between both of those guys. But, you know, nothing from Alfredo Angulo that really, you know, rocked Hernandez, and same thing on the other side. But I felt like even with Hernandez kind of like being the last-minute opponent in that particular bout, I just felt like he should have done a lot more to me. I felt it was closer than 8-2 because Hernandez just couldn't do anything to keep Alfredo Angulo from coming forward at him. But the judges felt like he just won every round but two of them. So that's, you know, mainly what we saw in that card from the co-feature and the main event. Any thoughts about Arislandi Lara or that co-feature bout with the last-minute replacement there of Vladimir Hernandez getting the win over Alfredo Angulo?
So, yeah, the Lara fight, man, you have a – not necessarily talking about the fight, but just the setup and how everything goes. You have a Fox platform.
Yep.
And I understand the co-feature, one of the main guys drop out. I get that part. But to put that on as the main event on a Fox – main event, just put it on there as a lead. We talking about Greg Vendetti. We talking about a guy I've never seen before. I've never heard, and this is me, a hardcore boxing fan. I've never heard of this guy. I've never saw this guy. Why is he in the main event on my TV talking about a bogus world title fight? Like, it's crazy. Like, you did this to me last. You did this to me last week with Porter and Formella. You know, these guys, if you're going to put Laura or you're going to put Porter in the main event, give me somebody that's going to give them resistance and that's going to make it a good fight. Don't get – these two guys cannot – and I love Porter. Don't get me wrong. Laura's, he's been around, world champion. He's done his thing. But these guys are not fit to be main events with those type of B-sides. It's just crazy. To be honest, bro, I didn't even watch the fight. That's how – man, I looked at the opponent. I'm like, man, we going straight to ESPN Plus. We're not even playing with Laura right now. Like, I saw the Angulo fight. I think the judges was like in the middle of that fight. They was like, man, we want to give it to Angulo, but this dude is so done. Like, we can't even have him fight no more. We not even gonna allow him to win this fight because it's just he looks so done. Like, this dude.
Yeah.
I don't know how he beat Quillen. Quillen was done too, but I don't like.
Yeah,
dude,
but
this
he
guy
should have beat Angulo of all. Like, come on, like, how do you not beat Angulo?
Man, you let this dude come in straight from I don't know the back door and look like throwing Juan Manuel Marquez uppercuts. Come on, bro, you just getting hit with everything, bro. Like, this dude, oh man. I don't know who he was in with. Looked like they just picked him up off the street, but he was schooling Angulo ass. I was like, where they get this dude from? Like, the fight was at super middleweight. These dudes look like they was junior middleweights, just coming in off the street. Like, I'm like, these dudes 168? Man, that whole card was just like, I ain't even watched the Laura fight, but Angulo, man, I don't even want to see him fight no more, man. It was sad to watch. Like, it was a time in the fight where I thought he was going to stop Hernandez because Hernandez was doing, like, I don't know, he was doing, like, this herky-jerky stuff. But he was hitting Angulo with everything he threw, man. It was just – it was crazy, man.
Man, yeah. Looking at that particular fight, I didn't – it just looked like they weren't super middleweights, like you said, because, I mean, you had the thing a few weeks ago with Benavidez – and Romer Alexis Angulo, right? And they look like super middleweights, you know. But these guys, they look so short, man. I thought they were like, you know, either at 154 or 147 or something, and they throwing all those.
And then they were so slow, man. They was like super slow.
Yeah, but that's the thing. They were slow and they threw all them punches. How is that possible, man? How is that possible? Yo, but like you said there with Angulo, it's like, yeah, it's kind of a good thing that they didn't give him the win, because if they did, either they would have him going up against Truex later on down the line, or worse yet, they would have him going up against a, you know, more viable, more viable guy in the super middleweight division, and he would have gotten, you know, blasted if that was the case, you know. So, you know, you can't, like, have him going up against the likes of, Daniel Jacobs or somebody like that. At this particular point of his career, he'll get beat down, you know. So, you know, I kind of, like, felt like that was something. And like you said there with the Laura Vendetti, man, like Fox, this is Fox, right? Like, there with the Porter for Mello one, like, I mean, I'm watching Porter because it's Sean Porter. I'm a fan. I'm a super fan of Sean Porter. That's the vice president of the Deontay Wilder fan club, but some people would probably call me the president of the Sean Porter fan club, because I would be watching every Sean Porter fight. I don't care, man. He comes out there. He comes to fight. But, you know, in that particular matchup, I felt like Sean Porter kind of reminded me of Tim Bradley, in a sense, in that he does smother a lot of his punches. And I've said that about Sean Porter a lot. But in that particular bout, I just felt like he could have, you know, he could have stopped Formella in that bout. But with Laura, like, Laura should have been able to wax this dude. Like, I don't know who he is. Like you said, I don't know where he came from, but Laura got to be able to wax that dude, because if you're, you know, supposedly a world champion and you're going up against this guy that, you know, not very many people know about, then you got to wax him. If you're supposed to be up there with the likes of a Jermell Charlo, Jared Hurd, Julian Williams, Tony Harrison, you got to be able to wax guys like these. And he wasn't able to do that. And it kind of like seemed like he was, you know, contending going through 12 rounds. And that can't really work. Even though he's, you know, at 37 or whatever it is, he just got to be able to just say, you know what, I'm going to just show that this guy does not belong in the ring with me. And that's what he should have did. And he didn't really do that.
No doubt. No doubt.
If you want... I don't think I would ever, if I know Laura is a main event, I would never pay for that fight. Like, as y'all said, Fox didn't do themselves any favors putting Laura as the main event. Because if he doesn't have a guy who brings it to him and has the ability to bring it to him, it's going to be a boring fight. And, you know, I'm not trying to do the whole what they tried to do to the other Cuban who break people's jaw, the jawbreaker, Rigondeaux. Because Rigondeaux's fights at least be interesting, because when he hit people, you like, shit, can this small dude really hit that hard? And so it's just, I couldn't wait for the other telecast to start, and I literally stopped maybe one or two rounds just to switch it over to ESPN and World Reset, because I couldn't, like, I was like, they got to be kidding me. Like, this is boring. And even the Sean Porter fight was kind of boring to me, too, because if you have people who don't have much resistance, it just kind of is what it is. The dude was, you know, moving the whole time, trying to, I'm going to say he was, go so far to say he was trying to survive, you know, in the Sean Porter fight. And the same in this fight, you know, I wouldn't say he was trying to survive per se, because, you know, he definitely was bringing the fight in this particular fight, but it was just boring. So I switched it over to the other fight, which it was more exciting than this one. But, you know, the Angulo fight, I said, you know, exactly what World Rank said, but I said it two fights ago when Angulo was getting hit and it looked like he was getting concussed off of one punch. like from what y'all said, I didn't watch the fight, but from what y'all said, the dude didn't have the power to necessarily hurt him, and or maybe he did, and Angulo looked really bad. But for the last four fights, Angulo looked very like the from the Canelo fight on, every fight Angulo has been in, he has looked like a man who's like one concussion away from really being hurt, because you can already tell he done had like one or two concussions, and they seriously should not let this man fight anymore. So him losing is a good thing, but you know, if they need to propel some, you know, young star, who you think they're gonna throw him in with? Somebody like Angulo, and you know he's not gonna turn down the payday, and or they may give him a little bit more money to entice him to come back in, but. I'm glad I didn't watch the fight because, yeah, I've been saying again for the last three, four fights, I don't want to see this man get hurt more than what he's already been getting hurt. I just really think Fox could have done better with this telecast, man. It's just they normally do, you know, better, but I guess you got to have an in-between one to get people fights.
All right.
Who's laughing?
And this goes to you know, what I've kind of like brought up over the past couple of weeks. When these you know, boxing fight cards, you know, get back on and they have the schedules for it, and all of these, you know, promotional companies or whatnot, the major promotional companies, and you know, I'm just talking about, you know, the thing there with Top Rank and PBC, for example. They have it to where they've already received the TV contract guarantees. So they have to put up cards in order to make up, you know, for the dates that they originally had. So I brought up the thing there with ESPN because with Top Rank, you know, they had the startup, you know, with the, man, it was like, what, 50-something cars that they had to do. So when they started the thing there in Las Vegas, like, that's where we got those type of cars. But, you know, now it's like, you know, they're catching up. And now you kind of, like, see them having a few bigger events, you know, nowadays. But in reference to this thing with Fox, when we kind of, like, talked about the Showtime schedule, we were like, Showtime schedule, you know, seems, you know, good. I mean, you got these main events, you got, you know, the stuff with the pay-per-views and everything. So then, you know, we were looking ahead for the Fox schedule, and when the Fox schedule came out, we were like, this is kind of, you know, average at best, but whatnot. So when you talk about these Fox cards, I mean, you had the Porter Formella main event. Now you have this thing with Lara against Vendetti. And next week, you're going to have your Dennis Dugas going up against, you know, Abel Ramos with the co-feature about being Rancis Barthelemy against, who is this, Pollo. And that's not looking all too hot there either. But I want to see if we have somebody that could kind of like defend these schedules. This guy is a, you know, PBC guy, but he is known as the president of the Deontay Wilder fan club, Mr. Matthew Brown. Thoughts on the fight with Lara last night, and was it as bad as World Rank and Mike Grady said they are?
Wakanda forever, my brother. What's going on, JR? Yo, it was as bad as everyone says it was. I got to be honest with you. I said on my Twitter that one thing Fox could have did on the production side was pumping the crowd booing, because it would have made Lara feel at home, because it was such a poor,
it was such a poor
fight. I was like, what the fuck is this? I got to be honest with you. I didn't even sit through the whole fight. I just turned the TV on Fox, and then I left my house and went out, you know. I did my PBC job. They got my ratings.
Yeah, you got the ratings.
They got the ratings, but I did not sit through that fucking fight at all. It was horrible, bro.
So I don't think
Barthelemy's fighting next week. I meant to tell you that. I think Barthelemy versus Pollo got canceled. That's what I was hearing last week. But I guess we'll see if anything's official this week. But from what I heard, that fight got canceled.
Did you just say Pollo? Come on, man. Oh, God. It's Pollo, but, oh, man, I don't know.
Oh,
man.
It's not Pollo? Oh, my bad.
No, that's... I'm not even going to go here. All right, back to this thing with Lara. This is like Lara versus Gaethje when they had all of those super welterweights on there, and they made Lara versus Gaethje the main event over Carlo versus... I mean, you had the thing there with Charlo against Lubin. You had Jared Hurd against Austin Trout. And you mean to tell me that you're going to have Lara versus Gaethje over both of those?
Listen,
man.
Al Heyman is very loyal to Arizlari Lara, all right? Lara
the American
has
team?
Been, yes. He was one of the originals that stayed with Heyman. Okay? And he's one of the guys that has always been loyal to Heyman, and Heyman repays him. This man made $500,000 last night. Okay? $500,000 for a TV fight, and he's not even a draw. Okay? So, that's like a UFC pay-per-view main event. Okay? So, Heyman's just repaying him, that's all. It's all good. I'm sure it did a good rating, though.
Yeah, because it might get... I'm trying to see if it'll get around the same ratings that Porter for Mella did. But I don't know.
It'll be higher.
Wow. If it's higher, man, I'm going to be like, oh, my goodness.
I think it'll be higher because the first hour that had Martinez versus Akron did 713,000 viewers. The second hour with Angulo versus Hernandez did 826,000 viewers. So it looks like they were picking up audience as the show was going on. Now, you have to remember, NBA was on ESPN last night. It wasn't on regular TV, okay?
Yeah.
The only thing that was on regular TV was NASCAR, which is not the same audience. So I think the basketball audience, who are, some of them are broke and ain't got cable, they was probably watching the fight instead.
Hey, them cable bills, man, gotta keep up with those cable bills. I mean, they ain't giving folks breaks for the cable. They're giving breaks for electricity, but not for cable there, buddy. But I thought you would have had some other joke for Harris Landy Lara talking about, yo, Dusty Rhodes should be ashamed that this guy has that nickname.
Listen, I like Lara, man. You will not get me to slander Lara. He was just bored. He's just, you know what it is? He's too good, okay? When you put him in against one of these no-hopers, it's just like he can't be exciting. When you put him in against a Hurd or a Castano, those are good aesthetically pleasing fights. Lara is always the kind of guy that's going to do just enough to win, right? So if you put him in against great competition, they're going to bring the best out of him. You put him in against a no-hoper, he's going to pat, 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 move, pat, 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 move, and that's it. He's going to do that for 12 rounds. That's just what he is, and it's why he's never been at the top of the – you know, when you have guys in there that don't belong in the ring with you, you need to get them out of there. And Lara has never been that kind of guy. Never.
See, but I blame Top Rank, though. I mean, I blame PBC. Because what Top Rank do is if you get a can, get the right can. You get what I'm saying? If you get a can, make sure that it's open. Make sure that it's going to spill. Don't just get a can because it's a can. Get us a can that's going to spill all on the TV. Top Rank do a good job. If you get a can, they spilling them all on the floor. They're not just going to sit there and let the can take the can for drink the can for 3 hours.
Let me tell you something. What's been going on in this country over the last few months? A lot of civil unrest, right? A lot of racism being revealed and brought to the forefront of American culture, right? The killing of unarmed black men, the shootings of unarmed black men, right? Do you think that it is a coincidence that the only black-owned business in boxing is putting these no-hope tomato can white boys in the main event to get their ass beat, to get their ass beat by colored fighters for 12 rounds, first for Miller, and now this guy? I think Al Heyman is just paying the white man back.
Nah. He did it right. He did it right when he had Mike Lee get his ass whooped by Caleb Plant. That's how you do it. If you want to get that type of can, get that type of can. You know what I'm saying? Don't get a can that's going to sit there for 12 hours because he might be paying it back, but who's watching? Ain't nobody watching the payback. You know what I'm saying?
Man,
like, if you want to get somebody, at least let us watch the payback. If we're going to get payback, at least let us be entertained by us getting a payback. But if we ain't entertained, we turning that shit off, then what's the point of doing it?
It's not for us. It's for white people to be reminded.
Oh man!
It's for white people to be reminded who's the real dominant species, Paulie Malignaggi. That's what this is for. Okay.
Oh man!
Send a message to Paulie Malignaggi. Oh my God, yo! Apparently on YouTube, someone made a comment talking about Lara is 41. No, man, he's 37, man.
Exactly.
Come on,
37.
Man.
His hairline was looking good, though.
Yeah. Oh, boy, that was...
Listen, Lara's the man. Black power. Shout out to Al Heyman. Getting them white boys beat up in the main event. That's what I like to see. That's what I like to see.
Oh Jesus! But what about this thing here with the Fox schedule, man? Man, I don't know about this thing next week because you're gonna have the same thing as you know what we had this week. You're gonna have the fights there on ESPN, you know, with Jermell Herring there against Jonathan Nkendo, you know,
no,
the guy
no,
that
no,
world
no,
rank
no, no, no.
Is picking Mm-mm. or has a world rank.
Just pick. I think you forgot that the Ugas fight is on Sunday, not on Saturday.
Oh, so we're going to have some semi-live coverage on
yes.
for this Ugas
yes.
versus Ramos thing. In,
it's
well,
on
actually,
Sunday, September 6th.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough little thing to pull off there. That's going to be interesting. Will I even get... Dang, that means Barthelemy versus... Man, you should... Hey, that fight... Hey,
I hate Barthelemy.
I gotta get confirmation that fight is scrap, man.
I heard it got moved. That's what I heard.
Because if they have that fight, I don't know if I'm going to be...
That's fucked up, JR. Supposed to be supporting the brand.
I gotta support the brand, but I don't know, man. You got the whole thing there with, you know, the on Saturday with Jermell Herring that's gonna be on. Steven Nelson's gonna be on. Jared Anderson's gonna be, you know, in that fight card too. So. Well, that's going to be a little bit interesting there because I'm going to try to
get Anybody watching
hey,
that shit?
Hey,
no.
hey.
Anybody watching that shit? Yo, this is like the fourth time Heron was supposed to fight Okendo, okay? I'm sick of the fight already.
Hey, you mean like how this was like the fourth time that Jose Ramirez was supposed to fight Victor Postol?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Wow. But if Jose Ramirez was a better seller over here, that fight would have been happening. The problem is he doesn't sell tickets, so they tried to take the fight to China. They could have been for it in February if it was in the United States. But
you said Ramirez don't sell tickets?
No, he does not sell tickets.
Okay.
He doesn't sell tickets at all. You remember when he drew quote unquote 10K to what was that? San Jose? What was that? Fresh Mart Center? Most of the tickets were under $10. Yeah, most of the tickets were under $10. That's why he drew so much. And they had to give a whole bunch away.
Okay.
Was it again in the Orozco fight or the Cepeda fight?
I think it was the Orozco fight. It was when he drew the 10,000 fans and everybody was all hyped, but then the commission report came out. And the total gate was like 200,000 at most, I think.
Yeah.
He's no Ryan Garcia. Let's say that.
Yeah, he's no Ryan Garcia there, man.
Yeah.
He's no Ryan Garcia on that. So, but like I said, man, that, you know, those two cars next week, that's, you know, going to be going down. What's been going on in the gossip scene, man? It looks like Devin Haney's trying to talk trash about Tank Davis. Of course, supposedly my favorite fighter there, Gary Russell Jr., said he wants that smoke with Terrence Crawford. You could give him that $1.5 million, and he'll take that fight. Which, I say, shoot.
Oh, he said
I
that.
Don't care if they offer Kell Brook $1.5 or $2 million or $2.5. Send that $1.5 over to Gary Russell Jr. I'd rather see that fight. I'm sorry.
Would he take that fight for $1.5?
Yeah,
because he made like 1.25 to beat up Kiko Martinez,
and he got about around that same amount for the Tuk Sutton Young Bayar fight.
Yeah, so you would think he could get more for Crawford, but then again, Bob Adams cheap, so you know,
yeah,
he ain't got no money.
ESPN, they talking about Disney got money. No, they don't.
Yeah, they ain't got no money. Come on, man.
They ain't got no money. So, shoot, why not? People would rather see that fight than see Kell Brook get
definitely
his ass sucked, you know? So, why not have that? What else is out there? Oh, I know there was this other thing that, you know, we were going to talk about. I don't know where it came from. But supposedly this YouTuber says that, oh, God. He said that Lance Pugmire supposedly is diagnosing what Deontay Wilder is going through.
Yep.
Are you kidding me?
What a piece of shit this Lance Pugmire is. A real piece of shit.
Are you kidding? Like, am I not mistaken, or wasn't Deontay Wilder saying that he is getting certification for diving or whatnot?
He's already certified. Thank you very much.
What's that?
He's already certified. He's been a certified scuba diver.
Okay. But he was out there diving as of last week. So, what is this about him being silent and, you know, not doing anything or, like, what?
This is a continuation of why the media attacked Al Haymon for years. If you're not giving these motherfuckers interviews and sound bites, then they want to bury you in the public. And for Lance Pugmire, mind you, this is the same Lance Pugmire that wrote that piece of shit column about Clarissa Shields when he says, oh, Clarissa Shields, she's not well-liked among the media, sources are saying. Who's the sources, motherfucker? It's only you fucking cracker-ass crackers talking amongst each other. Okay? So don't say sources. Say it's you motherfuckers that don't like her. Okay? This is the same guy. The same fucking guy. Now you're commenting on this man's mental health. So if Deontay Wilder was depressed, you think it's okay for you to put that out there? You're going to put someone's mental health out there. What kind of journalism is that? This is why I don't read The Athletic. And they sent me a deal where I could get like 90% off. I still say it's too expensive. I will not pay one dime for The Athletic.
Well, I will. Screw it. I'm going to put this on wax. Right. Thanks to T-Mobile, free pub. T-Mobile gave me free access
no.
to The Athletic.
No. Listen, free is too much for The Athletic also. Just so you know.
Yo, that's crazy, though, man. Like, come on. Like, how are y'all going to put this type of stuff out there, man? And I just don't understand it, man. Just don't understand it. Like, one would think with someone of that caliber that is accessible to, you know, particular media outlets. Not this one, though. We got to work on that.
Yep.
But, you know, he still is, you know, able to be, you know, talked to. You know, you have those guys within PBC, the PBC podcast, that have done interviews with Deontay Wilder. So I don't see what the issue is and why would someone put something out there like that. But I guess, Matt, you kind of like touched on it here a little bit. So so that's that, man. Shoot, man. Hey, I wonder if there's been any updates as far as the fight that was scheduled to happen next month. They're in the lightweight division with Javier Fortuna and Jorge Linares. Because I'm like, if Jorge Linares just, you know, had the whole thing with the positive test, then it could be like, you know, how Jermell Herring is, just go through the 14 days and then, you know, just reschedule it. But I haven't seen anything in reference to a reschedule of that particular bout. Have you?
I haven't seen anything. And it's looking like the zone ain't giving nobody no dates. That's what it is. Let's also keep in mind that Ryan Garcia and Luke Campbell allegedly signed for the fight to happen. Oscar said it's going to be in California, but he ain't got no date. The guy has no, like, I don't know what's going on with the zone, but nobody has no dates on when they're going to be having these fights. So, we'll see.
Well, we're talking about Oscar De La Hoya, and I mean, the guy, he's, you know, he has a fight, and I'm telling you, I'm going to have this guy over. Fight Luke Campbell, but my thing is, how are you going to have somebody coming over from the UK if they're going to still have these type of travel restrictions going on? So
they're not going to have no restrictions. They passed some type
well,
of.
They
said they make an exception for athletes, yeah, I think.
Exceptions, yeah, for athletes. So some of them they're able to do, but even with that, some of these other guys have these travel visa issues, and I'm like, come on, man. Like, how is that? Y'all still having these issues? It's like, yeah, it's whatever, man. But so you had that going on. What else is out there, man? what's up with Tank Davis, man? Devin Haney talking about Tank Davis and his weight loss program ain't really going off too well. What's up with that?
Yo, Devin Haney shouldn't be talking about anybody, first of all. I think Tank Davis looks good. You know, his fight is not until, what, 7 weeks from now? He looks like he's on target. He's fine. So let's just see how he performs. You know, this is his moment. You know, if he can't get it together for this fight, then there's no hope for him.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, this is the one where he's supposed to be, you know, featured on Showtime pay-per-view. And they're, you know, they're trying to build him up as the next guy. I mean, you got, you know, Leonard Ellerby all in with them. You know, you got Floyd Mayweather partially in with them. So they're trying to, you know, build him up as the guy. But, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I just don't know, like, what he's going to be able to do here within the next, you know, 1 to 2 years, because I feel like, like, 135 is about as good as it gets for him. I don't even see him going to 140. Like,
he's too small for 140.
Yeah, he's too small for 140. So everything has to be, you know, they're at 135, and all the fights that, you know, they were trying to do got to be at 135. So, I mean, you know, more power to him if he's able to, you know, keep that going. But, you know, for this particular matchup against Leo Santa Cruz, he has to make 130.
He could do it.
Once this thing was announced, with both of those titles on the line, that gives him leeway to not necessarily make 130.
Nah, he's going to make 130. Come on.
He'll make it. Okay.
He's going to make 130. But if I'm Tank Davis, I gotta just ignore Devin Haney. Ignore all the outside noise. I'm just waiting for this All Access, because you know Showtime's going to do the All Access. That's probably why Floyd has stepped up his public appearances with Tank. It's going to be for the All Access. This is his time to shine, man. He's going to show out, and I think he's going to announce himself as the next American star in boxing.
The next American star in boxing, there. Well, we'll have to see, because, you know, they're trying to build up the thing there for, you know, having, I guess, him against Ryan Garcia being the next,
yep,
you know, like pay-per-view super, pretty much that super fight type of deal there between those two. And I think that's going to be the, I guess, this generation's big event. So to speak, like the Floyd Mayweather versus the Oscar De La Hoya of this generation, I guess.
Yeah.
They're kind of like, you know, building that, you know, building up towards that. So we'll see how that, you know, materializes right there. But, you know, I haven't really seen, you know, much else as far as like any new fights being materialized or being worked on or anything like that, man.
Just Navarrete versus Ruben Dia.
Oh.
Yeah.
You mean Navarrete finally getting someone that's actually able to fight him?
Yeah.
Because Magdaleno didn't want to fight for 100 grand, or as they said in the Top Rank telecast the other day, they said it was like 200 grand, and Magdaleno passed on it.
That they're lying. They're lying. We know that they're lying because the fight fucking went to purse bid. What are they talking about? How did you just lie like that on national TV? The fight went to purse bid. We know how much the bid was that won the fight. Oh, my God. I can't.
We're talking about Top Rank that showed Vasyl Lomachenko's record to not have a loss. So, well, you know, when they do that, then, hey, they could talk about who what offers were supposedly sent out or not there.
Mm-hmm.
So, Yeah, you do have that. Man, you know what? I haven't even heard when that Josh Warrington fight's supposed to happen.
Yeah, you haven't really heard anything. I don't know what's going on with these fighters that don't have fights announced. I remember even your guy, Rashid Warren, allegedly since August 1st, he was supposed to announce his fight. It's already September. He still hasn't announced anything. Josh Warrington was supposed to fight Kanzu, whatever his name is, behind closed doors. That never materialized. You still don't have fights for Konaki, who else? Russell. A lot of the PBC guys don't have fights.
Russell,
a lot of the guys don't
have
Charles
fights. Martin.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, most of those guys, yeah.
And what's going on with Demetrius Andrade?
Right. Oh, God. we probably won't see Andrade this year.
Yeah.
The thing with Josh Warrington, how is it that Josh Warrington and Kanzu couldn't fight in one of those fight camp cards?
Good question. What's going on with Eddie Hearn? Maybe he's not getting no dates. That's
Jamal,
what it is. He's like, he ain't got no dates. He's getting no dates. If you think about it,
find some dates.
What's Matchroom announced? They haven't even announced AJ yet. And we know he has to fight Poland. And they still haven't announced it yet.
So
yeah,
they have to materialize with a lot of these fighters, man. Because these dates aren't necessarily gonna work, man. They gotta have something for I see a few open dates out there.
Yeah, I think what's happening is these promoters are attempting to use the pandemic as an excuse to pay these fighters as less as possible, and these fighters don't want to fight for the money that they're being offered. That's the only thing I could surmise.
Yeah, I kind of see that there. Because they're like, oh, we don't have a lot of gates, so we can't necessarily pay you this type of money without a lot of gates, you know?
Yeah. Even Inoue doesn't have a fight date yet, and he was supposed to be some big signing for Top Rank.
Right. He hasn't had anything yet. And, you know, his fight with Casimiro got scrapped. So with that fight getting scrapped, they got to find something for it in a way. And they haven't been able to do that yet. At least, you know, they could have him fight Mahoney or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's pretty
and
much
are
it.
Are we sure Lomachenko versus Teofimo is official?
No.
Have you seen any commercials for it? Any fight posters?
Nope.
Anything at all?
Nope.
I haven't.
Nope. Did they say anything about it on ESPN last night?
No, they did not.
So what's this thing about it being official? Maybe we should reach out to Mr. Teofimo Lopez to kind of be like, yo, about this fight.
Are you sure it's happening?
You sure it's happening? Because I ain't seen a promotion for this fight there, buddy. So, I don't know about all that.
You gotta wonder what's going on. Like, how do you not even have a fight poster? Every fight has a little poster. I'm like, where is at least the fight poster? They're telling us where it's at, what time it is, what channel it's on.
Yeah, like,
Top Rank's not a good promoter no more, but come on. Like, at least promote this fight.
Yeah, like, I mean, my thing is here, man, when I see, let's see here, man. Let's see. Well, I don't even see it on the thing there for top rank there, but
yeah.
Hey, you know, that's I don't even see like any news on it. So, and you know, top rank is like one of the most you know, active groups as far as like sending out press releases and that type of thing. So.
Yep.
I haven't seen anything in the inbox.
Nothing. Nothing. Makes you wonder, is the fight actually happening?
Yeah. So, because that's supposed to be their biggest fight that they could make. And nothing. Maybe we should, I don't know. Yeah, we should either hit up Teofimo Lopez, or maybe we should hit up Carl Moretti, or, you know, whatever. Corn, or, you know, Todd DeVoe. Hey, about this Teofimo Lopez Vasa Lomachenko fight. Is it really happening or is it not? You know.
So, yep.
We'll see. You know, we'll see on that, man. But yeah, that's pretty much you know, what I got here so far this week, man. I'm. You know, looking to see what else is going down, but you know, like I said, I'm working on seeing what's going to happen for next week, and then the following week, the 13th, the September 13th. After those fights, I'm going to see about having one of those guests on, because I'm working on having Jared Anderson on. The show here in the next couple of weeks, so we'll see about making that happen here. So that's pretty much what I have for this particular episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. Yeah, we'll be back same time Sunday 7:30 Eastern time. You know, and that's how we do here on the Boxing Source Radio Show. And like I say at the end of every show, folks, before the boxing is the hit and I get hit, not the stand and trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening, everybody.
Bomb squad, baby.